Well, first of all, I would like to thank the KITP for giving me this other opportunity to talk about our work here. And also, for assigning me Max Planck as my co-worker. I would think that this is a very unique occasion to be backed up by somebody like Max Planck. But actually not so, because in 1989 there was a program here at the ITP by then on quantum chaos and a conference in this program. And at this time the ITP managed to assign me, well, J.W. Goethe as a co-author. this is really nice to get all these nice co-authors here. Now, since we're already on a time travel, at this time when I was a professor at the Goethe University of Frankfurt, and when the APS invited me, they translocated me, at least they tried to translocate me to an Islamic country, to the University of Frankfurt at Amman. And in order to camouflage this, the fact that it's in Jordania, they put an E in front for Spain, and it still looks like a modern miracle to me that this letter finally made its way into my mailbox. Well, could have ended up in La Jolla, San Diego. But here are my true collaborators, Dirk Brockmann and Lars Hufnagel, who deserve more of the credit for this work that I'll tell about than I. And here's my true title, Around the World in 80 Days. The other one I gave in the program was just to attract people. Well, as already Jules Verne noticed about 130 years ago, the world has become smaller. La Terre a diminué puisqu'on a la parcourt maintenant 10 fois plus vite qu'il y a 100 ans. This was for Pierre. Now here for the compliment. As stated Jules Verne, I agree with Mr. Fogg, the world has grown smaller since a man can go around it 10 times more quickly than 100 years ago. So if this was true in the time of Jules Verne, meanwhile, 130 years later, it has certainly become 100 times faster than in those days. Approximately. And so today one would state a man or a woman can go around it 100 times faster than 100 years ago. And this has certain consequences. As you know, traveling, even Jules Verne describes this in much detail, bears a lot of risks and dangers. When you travel so fast around the globe. And in our days it has some other dangers that are related to diseases. And but actually this was known a long time ago. When I was giving this talk at Georgia Tech recently, I learned that one of the early settlers described it this way, in this country: so sweet the air, so moderate the climb, none sickly lives or dies before his time. So this is James Oglethorpe. So this is, if you stay home, you don't have these risks, but if you travel, here is the risk that you could encounter in former times, Black Death. The plague was a disease that caused the death of 20 million people in the 14th century. And it had, especially it had the properties that the time from infection to death was extremely short, about 1 to 7 days, such that Boccaccio described this in the following way. They ate lunch with their friends and supped with their ancestors in the next world. So with this fast dynamics, it is, compared with the distance that a traveler could cross in those days, which was about 20 kilometers per day. So the local infection dynamics was fast compared with the spatial spreading dynamics. This is something that tends to, beg your pardon? Yeah, there are time contours that I will just explain. But with this dynamics, one can imagine that a description in terms of diffusion equations makes sense, actually reaction diffusion equations. And here's what you see. You see the wave fronts that have been determined over these 3 years. When it started down here, the plague entered Europe over the Silk Road, and so here and started more or less in southern Italy, and swept over Europe within 3 years to Norway, and Okay, so these are the wave fronts, and so it is clear that one can use a reaction diffusion type of description. For the local infection, this is well known as the SIR model. By the way, many of you heard the talk of Len Sanders recently, which I did not because I was giving this talk somewhere else. So I guess most of you are already aware of these things, but let me just repeat this. So the SIR model assumes three species, the susceptibles, the infected, and the recovered or dead. The susceptibles collide with infected, and so the rate of turning into infected is given by this R0. The infected increase when they encountered, when susceptibles are encountered infected, and otherwise they die out with a certain rate. They become recovered or dead with the rate tau, which is the average infectious period. R0 is called the basic reproduction number. And now from this dynamic, it is clear that there is infected increase, the number of infected increases, susceptibles decrease, and as the infected recover, this decays again. Now, if you add spatial degrees of freedom, that is to say the diffusion terms to the susceptibles and infected, then you get wavefronts that travel here, shown in one dimension. There is a wave packet of infected traveling along the z-axis. In front of this wave packet, the almost all are still susceptible, and behind this packet, almost all are have been infected and are recovered. So this is the simple epidemic model that you can use for epidemics like plague in the 14th century or in more recent centuries. But of course, this is something that is no longer true for today's travel, where people can go around the globe 100 times faster than in the 14th century. And here we have the map of aviation movements, which we determined for the worldwide aviation traffic, between 10 passengers per day and 25,000 passengers per day. And one can see that there is heavy traffic within the United States, between Northern Europe and United States, and of course here in Japan, Hong Kong, etc. Now, since one can travel on such fast rates around the globe, and the infection dynamics is on a much on a relatively small scale, this approximation in terms of reaction diffusion equations, simple diffusion equations, is no longer valid. And this is something which tends rather to some super diffusive behavior. And it was Lars Hufnagel, who was here, who had this idea that we could use some of our models that we had developed in some other context to describe the spreading of epidemics in a model for in a super diffusive model. So imagine here you have a landscape, a potential landscape, potential maxima and minima, and a Brownian particle that diffuses in such a landscape. If the temperature is small enough, this particle will remain bounded within a well, some minimum here, and carry out some diffusive motion, and will not travel over larger distances. But if you have a super diffusive process, such a particle which carries out local diffusive motions can make large jumps to other potential wells and remain bounded there for some time before jumping to again another potential well.
Those are Levy flights.
Beg your pardon?
Those are Levy flights.
Yes, yeah. Those are actually Levy flights in an inhomogeneous environment. So Levy flights usually, not usually, but often are considered in some free space. But here we have to deal with Levy flights in some inhomogeneous medium. And the idea is that there are cities, metropolitan areas or whatever, where there is some salience for travelers to go. And so the traveler can make travel large distances in short times. This is the idea behind this. Now we'll come back to this, of course, in a little more detail. But so I'd like to take this as a motivation to give you some introduction to Levy flights and Levy walks, and in particular in the context that we need here, Levy flights in inhomogeneous environment. So we speak of normal diffusion if a typical distance x is traveled, that is traveled, increases like a square root of t. It's shown here in blue. This is a typical trajectory for a diffusing particle. And well, the trajectory is here. And a Levy flight is characterized by short events of long path that are traveled in instantaneously, actually. This is when you call it a Levy flight. If these long jumps physically take some time, then you call it a Levy random walk. And those are characterized by mean square displacements that increase like some power law, different from 2, where the exponent is different from 2. So here, for instance, like some power t to the 1 over mu, where mu is the Levy flight exponent. These Levy flights and walks have been observed in various physical and biological systems in the meantime, and even other systems like chaotic Hamiltonian systems, Josephson junctions, particle in an optical trap, in optical lattices, particle dispersion in turbulent flows, stock price fluctuations, the flight paths of albatrosses, and so on. If the distribution of jump lengths, which we call here P of delta X, if this distribution has a mean, then we are used to find a Gaussian distribution P of X and T. This is due to the central limit theorem. And then we, when we add up these such jumps, we always find the probability density increasing like spreading like a Gaussian, whose width increases like a power law t to the minus 1/2. And you all know that macroscopically this can be described by a diffusion equation whose Fourier transform is given here, where it goes like minus d k squared. But now there are situations where you can break the central limit theorem. For instance, if you have a distribution of jump length that doesn't have a mean. But then there is something which is generalized central limit theorem due to Levy and Kinchin, whereby you can find another scaling behavior of the PDF in terms of a function g of mu, g mu of x over dt to some power 1 over mu. And then the typical, and those are the Levy processes, and then the typical length traveled in time t goes like t to the power 1 over mu. And it has been shown that this can be described, again, in some kind of a generalized diffusion equation, which, well, maybe I should explain here by using the second line. This PDF satisfies, the Fourier transform of this PDF satisfies an equation that looks similar to the Fourier transform of the diffusion equation, apart from the exponent here, which is mu in general, whereas it's 2 in the Gaussian case. Now, from this, people have gotten the idea then that one could use a generalized fractional diffusion equation to describe this type of spreading behavior, and it goes under the name of fractional diffusion equation, or later fractional Fokker-Planck equation. And what you would what you could do simply is defining it this way, and defining this as the Laplace transform of some equation that's given here. So introducing some fractional Laplacian delta mu over 2, which is simply defined as the Fourier transform by the Fourier transform of this equation here. And if you do this, if you define it this way, then this Laplacian, this fractional Laplacian, comes out as this this expression here. It's a singular integral operator. See here this denominator, and there is a large bulk of literature. Meanwhile, has been even before these equations were studied. Literature on fractional analysis. But here, as I said, we don't have to deal with Levy flights in free space, but we rather have to deal with Levy flights in homogeneous media. And so we have an additional potential, which in the, oh, excuse me, I forgot something that I should mention. I don't see it here, but okay. The Gaussian case, the central limit theorem, is a special case of the Levy-Kinchin generalized central limit theorem for mu equal 2. So if you have mu equal 2 here, then you recover the central limit theorem, and the spreading becomes Gaussian, and the diffusion becomes normal with a square root behavior of the typical distance traveled. Okay, now we'd like to add external potentials. So how you do this in the normal diffusion case is, you have an additional force field here, and your diffusion equation turns into a Fokker-Planck equation, which corresponds to Langevin dynamics when you look at the trajectories. And now if we want to do this for Levy flights, we have an additional inhomogeneities. What kind of equation should we use then? And one way to go ahead would be, again, to add a force field into the generalized diffusion equation. So then you would have a generalized fractional Fokker-Planck equation where you had just introduced this force field in addition to the diffusion piece here. This type of Fokker-Planck equation has been studied in recent years, but it has a number of problems. For instance, it violates detailed balance, and the stationary distribution that comes out of this equation is not the Boltzmann distribution. So it's different from the Boltzmann distribution. And this is certainly what you would not like to have in many physical situations. And in our case, certainly we don't want to have this. And so we need some different description, different from this here. And this is what we did in some work, which was published this year. In order to describe the idea behind it, let us shortly consider the case of a heteropolymer, a chain of different particles here, a chain that can convolute, can fold, and if this chain, and there is a green particle that can travel or diffuse on this chain, hop along these sides. Now, if this chain folds rapidly and folds in this way, then a particle, the green particle, which travels on this chain, can hop long distances just by hopping from one branch to another branch on this chain. So there are long flights that can be traveled in negligible time. And this is the situation that that we have in mind, and for which we have derived this new description. Well, it's down here, fractional Fokker-Planck equation that describes Levy flights in external potentials. So, and it's given here, it has these fractional Laplacians decorated by these Boltzmann factors.
In your picture here, these long paths are basically random. I don't see where you get a power law distribution if you wouldn't allow you to.
Okay, that's a different story. That when you would like to know the distribution of path lengths,
yeah. This is just a random graph.
Sure, yeah. But then you have to, of course, when you want to go into details for polymers, then you have to consider what is the probability of a connection from somewhere here to somewhere here? But that's a different story.
But this what basically shows that you have polymers. But if you do a polymer model, you can show these jump length of polymers becomes from.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this was. Okay. I use this picture essentially to give you an idea what we have in mind when we are using this type of model. There's also another point. These Levy flights, I make this distinction between Levy flights and Levy walks, which is actually not what you would imagine just when you consider these words, flights and walks. But it is, historically, it's been like this, that one calls Levy flights such processes that don't take any time at all for a jump. So the jumps are instantaneous. Now, the jumps can go over infinite distances. Actually, the mean is infinite. The mean jump length is infinite. Nevertheless, doesn't take any time. It takes zero time. This is what you call a Lévy flight. And historically, this seemed, of course, unphysical until the time when we suggested this in the 80s, mid-80s. Let's see. We suggested a model which later become, for describing some anomalous diffusion, super diffusion in chaotic systems where particles traveled a finite time. And these processes have later been called Lévy random walks, and those are more physical in most situations. But the Lévy flights, strictly speaking, looked unphysical to many people because they violate special relativity. except if you consider, say, a situation like this here, where you have a folding polymer, where you can jump from one part of the chain to some other part of the chain due to these foldings. Okay, now, this fractional Fokker-Planck equation, which we'll use, it satisfies Gibbs-Boltzmann statistics, and the stationary state, first of all, is independent of the exponent that the Lévy exponent mu, and it also the steady state is also not different from the Boltzmann distribution, which is a property that we would like to have. And this fractional Fokker-Planck equation has as special cases on one side the generalized Langevin dynamics. So let's see. Now it has it has as special cases on one side the ordinary diffusion, if we use mu equal 2, as I said before, in the normal in the free space, the Lévy flights turn into a normal Gaussian diffusion. For mu equal 2, this becomes simply the usual Fokker-Planck equation. And on the other hand, for mu different from 2, but potential equals 0, this has as a limiting case the homogeneous superdiffusion, so the fractional diffusion equation. So this looks fine to us to use now this type of fractional Fokker-Planck equation instead of the other one. And let me jump over this. One can use it for periodic potentials, somewhat amazing results, or random potentials, polymers, etc. But let me go on and mention some work that is intuitively related to the epidemics dynamics. And it's the human saccadic eye movements. Now imagine that you look at a picture like this. This is actually our, a somewhat older picture from our group, one of the many celebrations, festivities. Dirk Borgmann has tested people with such images in order to see how they perform eye movements. So we humans, we have a very high density of ganglion cells in the fovea. So we have a spot where we see much better than in the periphery. And this is why we scan pictures or we scan a text when you read. And so those saccadic eye motions can be detected with an eye tracker, which we have in our lab. And here's how two different persons scanned this image. What you can see is that there is a varying salience for varying things, like highest salience is for faces and food. Okay. And we have, this was actually the motivation in the beginning to formulate these fractional Fokker-Planck equations. And it was also the motivation for us to study the SIR model in a generalization. Now one, you can imagine that you can describe this by a saliency field S of X, which you determine the salience from such a picture, use this as some kind of Boltzmann factor, this S of X. Here it is. And use this in a fractional Fokker-Planck equation to describe these saccadic eye motions. Now this looked to us like a Levy flight, where the eye performs instantaneous jumps to other parts of the image. Here to compare this with a simulation where in this saliency field we assume a normal diffusion process that's shown here in blue for small low temperatures and for high temperatures. It's certainly not something that is that's happening here when people scan such a picture. Neither at low temperatures nor at high temperatures. Here is the simulation of such a saccadic eye motion in the fractional Fokker-Planck approach, in a Levy flight in such a saliency field. And it is certainly closer to what has really happened in this in these experiments than the normal diffusion. So we also found out that there's an optimal exponent, which is 0.73, with which the scanning of these pictures are most efficient. So the scanning, first of all, is more efficient if you use Levy flights than normal diffusion, and it is most efficient for this exponent here.
How do you decide?
It was a measure to determine how you search optimally the space here in this saliency field. Okay, this.
What's the measure of better or worse searching?
How do you do this? Um, I have to look it up.
But I'm also a little confused. These simulations are for a given, they're simulations of a fractional Fokker-Planck equation mm-hmm. With a given potential.
Yes.
And so you pick some mu.
Yes.
But the potential is the empirical potential?
Yes. So the idea behind...
And it's not necessarily associated with...
It's not an it's not an a priori potential. Okay, so it's taken out of the experiment.
Right, so but it's not necessarily associated with the mu for which you're doing the simulation. So
Right. Anyhow, in our description, this is what I wanted to make clear before. The stationary distribution is independent of mu, so there's no relation between the exponent mu and the potential. There is in the older fractional Fokker-Planck approach that has been used by many people, so in those cases the stationary distribution still depends on mu, but in our case not. So this is independent of mu, and the idea behind this was essentially to demonstrate that saccadic eye motions have the characteristics of Levy flights in homogeneous environments. And for that purpose, I mean, more generally, you would like to have something that tells you the saliency field just from the picture, right? Without, you take this image, and maybe you would like to have something that tells you what the saliency of this image is, more than me, like what I said, food and faces. But this is not what we did here. We used the experiment to determine the saliency field.
No, what I missed is that it's independent of
okay. Okay. Now I should come to the back to the epidemics. So we certainly have some kind of inhomogeneous environment, an inhomogeneous distribution of people, of densities of people. Here you see the population density, varying population density for Europe, for instance. And here, for instance, you see the distribution of city sizes in terms of populations up to 10 to the 7th. And it is a power law.
This is Europe?
This is the whole world.
No, this is America.
This is America only?
Yes. This is U.S.?
Okay, good. So, okay, Santa Barbara and New York, yes. Now this is certainly, it's clear that there is some strong inhomogeneity. And now the idea that Lars had was that one could use Levy flights and these population densities as a saliency field, similarly to these saccadic eye motions. So then let's now assume a variable population density C of n of x, which consists of susceptibles, infected, and recovered, And the C of X is a normalized density, spatial density, which is this saliency field, this inhomogeneous distribution of the population. And we, by small letters, we denote these concentrations, S of X and T and I of X and T. And then our infection dynamics can be written as is given here. Here's the local infection dynamics, S times I, again here S times I, minus I. And here is this fractional Fokker-Planck operator, L, which has the fractional Laplacian, and it has these concentrations, these densities C of X as a saliency field.
But your R0 is a constant.
Beg your pardon?
R0 is a constant.
In this model, yes. Hmm. And here you can see, for instance, in a free space, the diffusion front, and now in an inhomogeneous environment, if you have a diffusing particle which diffuses normally, it just gets a little more wiggly, but the diffusive spreading of the disease is not too different from diffusion in an homogeneous environment. But now let's look.
Can you go back to what is the inhomogeneity?
Oh, the inhomogeneity is this distribution C of X.
Yeah. So.
Of people.
What did you choose?
Yeah. And it, this is. I'm a little confused. This average is over space? And what about time?
Well, it's just normalized to the whole population.
Yeah.
But why isn't this dependent on time?
Oh, this... There are no people dying and no people coming. Mm-hmm.
Oh, for SARS, only a few people died, so the effect on the entire population is extremely small. So C of X is constant in time. I mean, there were epidemics where there was some effect, of course.
It's because it's the whole population,
and
mm-hmm. it's mostly interchange between susceptible and recovered.
Okay.
And here he doesn't form the equation that doesn't have the detailed down.
It does. Okay, so this is a simulation for an artificial distribution of cities here in this color code where you saw the normal diffusion in such an inhomogeneous landscape. But now let's look how this looks when we have Levy flights spreading in such an inhomogeneity.
Can we pick a mu?
Yes, we pick a mu. And this is just first a simulation to show you how it looks differently.
But what you mean when you say Levy flight is that you picked a mu?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to see any wavefront at all here, once again. And what one can see is that there are some infections some distance ahead of this wavefront. And so And here's the statistics. The largest cities are infected earlier, and they trigger the infections. So here are the 10, the largest 10% of the cities. Their infection happens somewhat earlier than for the other 90% of the cities. And these larger cities trigger infections to smaller neighboring cities. And well, this is just a very general model, but it might be helpful to tell us something about vaccination strategies. For instance,
does it get more skewed? So say instead of plotting the largest 10% of the cities, I plotted the largest 1% of the cities.
Uh-huh.
Are those infected even earlier?
I'm not sure whether it would make much of a difference. It depends also on the transport, how strong your transport, how fast your transport is.
Let me repeat your question. You have a distribution of city sizes.
Yes.
Take it to be the power law or what?
Yes.
Okay, but mm-hmm. randomly distributing in space.
Yes.
Now that seems a little odd. Because large cities are not random.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Well, this is.
this is just some.
Okay, yeah.
Of course. It's no problem at all to take a realistic distribution because it's known, and so this was not supposed to be the realistic simulation. But you can do it, and it's very simple to get a realistic distribution of cities. We have it here for Europe in one of these transparencies, and so you can do this. But let me go on to another model that we have studied and which is more specific for real epidemic, the SARS epidemic, which started in China and then was spread via Hong Kong to various countries. There was an outbreak in more than 30 countries and more than 8,000 cases reported. The fatality rate was close to 10%. And we suggested a model that takes into account the worldwide aviation traffic in order to account for these super diffusive long paths. And it is based on a standard local infection model where we assume a susceptible phase, a latent phase, an infected phase, and Y is the time to admission and a recovered phase or quarantine phase. So the distribution of waiting times has been determined. I call this waiting times. So after the latent phase, the time until one notices the onset of the infection, where somebody is already infected but and can infect others but hasn't noticed it. So this is known to peak at about 6-7 days. And then the time to until somebody gets hospitalized, this distribution of times has also been determined, and it also has a peak near 5 days. So in the simulations, we have used these waiting time distributions. And for the spatial transport, we assumed a master equation of dynamics in terms of a matrix Mij that describes the flux of the transport from urban areas Yi to urban areas J. And you probably have seen these pictures before. Here's the local infection dynamics in Hong Kong. It's of course started exponentially, and the exponent in this exponential growth is the basic reproduction number R0, which was between 2 and 4 in the beginning, 2.7 or something, and then became smaller due to measures that had been taken on people or people who became more careful. So we determined the spatial dynamics from tables like this that are available on the web. One can actually also probably purchase all the information, all the statistics, but this was a little too complicated for us, and we needed this faster. And so Lars has developed some automized technique to download these informations. Here, for instance, you have the days in a week, the departure airport of a flight, the arrival airport, and the aircraft type. So when you know the aircraft types, you also know the typical capacity of a flight. And using this information, and for 500 largest airports in the world, and including 2 million flights weekly, we could account for 95% of the international civil air traffic, and by including more than 150 different types of aircrafts. So all this led us to this matrix Mij in the master equation, and this is depicted here. Again, you see heavy traffic here from the west coast to the east coast and to London. Oops, sorry. And then in Asia again, Japan, Hong Kong. Okay, here it is again. So the color code here was between 10 passengers per day and 25,000 passengers per day. And we've simulated, well, first one can determine, of course, the relaxation frequencies of this master equation. And the dominating relaxation rate came out as 11.5 weeks. How much is this now in hours? About 2,000 hours. And in CGS units, it is 6.99 million seconds. But some people might want to know how much this is in days. And comes out at 80.5 days. Okay. And then we have simulated the the spreading of the epidemic by putting a seed on the island of Hong Kong. And this is how it looked in this model, in the simulation, after 30 days and after 90 days. And here's the situation that was noticed about 90 days after the infection started at the end of May. The cases reported to WHO. And the model is able to describe this spreading quite well. There's some deviation here for Canada, which is due to the fact that you have some statistics that is not the fluctuations for relatively small numbers. So a woman who traveled from Hong Kong to Canada and who was in the right spot at the right time and who could carry the disease to Canada, where there should have been somewhat higher probability to carry it to the United States than Canada. Okay, we also can study with this model other scenarios, like a scenario where we assume that there was an outbreak in New York. How the epidemic would spread to other countries after 90 days, or for an outbreak in London. And we also can derive some conclusions on vaccination strategies, how fast one should vaccinate, and which regions should be vaccinated. And, well, where is my last? Well, the last transparency disappeared. So I guess I will stop here, and thank you for your attention.